Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Track, a podcast for runners. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This podcast is dedicated to and centred upon the committed club runner, the committed amateur. Once again, I'm joined by Robbie Campbell. How are things, Robbie?
Very good. Thank you, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. And we're also joined by Kat Hutchinson. How are you, Kat?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
Good. Well, it's nice for you to join us again. Should be another sort of action-packed episode with lots to get through, particularly race results and some news. Anything exciting to report since we last got together, Robbie?
Kids have gone back to school this week, which is quite a momentous occasion in our house. So two out of three back at school. Third one starting next week, back to some kind of normality. And I was able to do a bit of the drop-offs and pick-ups this week, seeing the madness at the school gates as the parents argue with each other about social distancing and who should be wearing masks and which children should be dropped off where. So yours back, Kat.
Yeah, they've come back. It's kind of nice to be back doing the school run. I've always hated it, but it's really nice to be back to it. My kids' school have already abandoned the staggered entry to school. They've done 2 days and decided that was useless.
It seems just unbelievably complicated.
Really hard to time that walk to school to be dead on 10-2.
Next week, because we're going to have three. Our youngest is going to start because he's going to start his first year. And so the three of them are going to have three different start times. So when we drop them off or pick them up, there's going to be kind of 25 minutes in between picking the first and the third. But yeah, good. Like I said, good to have them kind of back in anyway. I think they're desperately needed after 6 months out. What about you, Ben? You okay?
Yeah, all fine, thank you. Nothing as exciting as that for me. Getting back to work a bit more regularly, so getting onto campus. And other than that, just been getting stuck into the Tour de France, which is one of the highlights of the sporting calendar for me. I love sort of sitting and watching that for hours on end.
Are you back full-time at the university? Because the students are back in force, aren't they?
Yeah, so the students are sort of making their way back now. Next week is induction week for us, so we'll be in about next week, and then it sort of kicks off in earnest the following week with teaching starting again.
What's your plan? How are you going to fit in your 14 mile a day runs, Ben, at 11 o'clock in the morning? Is that going to fit in well with your timetable?
It's going to be tricky. Work gets in the way of those a bit.
Commuting runs again.
Yeah, back to commute runs, I think. As I said, we should have quite a few things to get through this episode. So what we're going to try and cover, predominantly we're going to cover what happened at the British Championships in Manchester this past weekend. We also saw a pretty exciting Diamond League in Brussels with Mo Farah setting a new world record. And we're going to chat through the other racing highlights that have happened since our last episode. At the end of this episode, we'll also introduce our interview, as we always do. And this week, we were chatting with Jenny Nesbitt after her 5,000-metre run at the British Champs. Jenny Nesbitt is a bit of a name in the running community around Worcester and across the UK club scene. So hopefully you'll enjoy that interview, which we'll bring to you after this. So, Kat, how's your running been since we last spoke?
So, still injured. Still trying to manage this hamstring hip kind of injury. So I'm still doing a bit. I'm still getting out every other day at the moment and just trying to manage that. But I'm in that sort of that position of, do I stop and heal it or carry on like I would if this was the middle of a marathon training block? And so, yeah, we'll see. I'll let you know in 2 weeks what I decided.
Yeah, and still not taking the plunge and go and see a physio yet?
No. Still, I'm still not sure I can trust any physio enough, but we'll see. I think it's getting close to time to do that.
Sounds good.
Have you got anything planned in, Kat? What's your, have you got any races planned in to the end
no,
of the year?
No, my next thing will be Manchester on the 11th of April next year, so I've got plenty of time. Obviously, I'd like to try and, you know, I'm running well when I am running, so I'd like to be targeting some sort of 10K in December time, but have to see from here. I need to get this sorted so that I can put some proper miles in.
I think we spoke last time a bit about it, but the problem with that injury, from my experience, is that I'm not sure resting actually does it any good.
Yeah, I don't feel like, I mean, I am starting to feel that it is worse after a day that I've run, but I'm not sure it's much different. It can be bad after like Friday and Saturday, I spent 2 days watching athletics. It felt pretty bad after that, just not moving.
You see, when mine's been bad, and I've had a couple of episodes of that a few weeks ago, you kind of walk home on the Monday, but then by Tuesday, you're ready to kind of do 10 that's miles
it.
Again.
Yeah, and you're just thinking, that's it.
What the hell is going on?
Yeah, it was literally just that run. And then the next time I tried, it was okay again.
Good. How about you, Robbie? How are things? You still working with John Danahay? Any good sessions recently?
It's going well with John, actually. So I've kind of been managing my own similar problems to Kat with the piriformis, but hopefully I'm kind of coming out of that. So I've had the best week I've had in a long time, really. So I've got 3 good sessions in. Long run, well, 90 minutes this morning without kind of feeling like I have to stop. John is just brilliant, really, to work with. I mean, I know that we've spoken about this on the show before, but doing any kind of work with a coach is just absolutely brilliant. It's, you know, something that I've never really thought about doing before, but he basically picked me apart from the start and showed that I knew absolutely nothing about myself. You know, I'd always have pigeonholed myself as a strong runner, but with no speed. And John basically put a couple of sessions on to show that I'm not a strong runner at all. And actually, the speed and there's no speed either. So anyway, now I've given up running completely and looking for something else to do on a weekend. But he's put on a few weeks of the sessions are always kind of strength-based. So always continuous. He loves a float. So loves kind of the 6x3 minutes with a quite fast float in between. And the difference in how I feel now compared to a few weeks ago when I just couldn't manage it is incredible, really. It makes you realise that people with coaching qualifications actually know what they're doing. So obviously nothing's on paper yet in terms of races or PBs or anything, but it's nice to kind of feel, you know, optimistic and strong while I'm running. So long may that continue. And just literally putting yourself in the hands of somebody else and just letting them, I mean, some people, that'd be their idea of a nightmare, but just getting a bit of paper at the start of the month telling you what to do on what days and then just being able to kind of follow it. It's quite a liberating thing in a weird kind of way. And it just allows you to kind of get on and do it. What about yourself, Ben, in marathon training?
Yeah, all going well. 4 weeks today until Wrexham Marathon. Last couple of weeks have been good. The mileage has been good. The sessions have been in there. It's been really great getting involved with the Team Marathon Road group. It's really good to jump in with the long runs, which the last 2 weeks have been really sort of honest and really good pace. And also a couple of sessions as well. So, yeah, really loving getting to run with those guys. Yeah, so probably another week or two of high mileage, big marathon sessions, and then we'll start thinking about tapering down in a couple of weeks' time. So touch wood, the injuries stay away, and we can have a consistent run in for the next 4 weeks.
Do you feel that you're kind of going up a level with Team Marathon Road guys? Because your sessions and your long runs are, you know, even by your standards, they are on a kind of different level to what you normally do, aren't they?
Yeah, I think if I were to do it for a sustained period, I definitely think it would, because there are better runners there and because they're all very committed and very, it's a nice environment. And yeah, it's just great to be able to do those sorts of runs with a group. And they've been so inviting and so like helpful. Carl Wellborn, who's one of the guys who leads it up. They've just been so sort of nice and helpful there and sort of really inviting. So it's been a really nice environment to train in. And because so many are doing Wrexham as well, there's a sort of a common goal and a sort of a common timeline that we're all working towards. So it's been great, really good. So what we're going to do, guys, we're going to jump straight into the race results then. And only one place to start, really, and that's the British Champs, which took place in Manchester on Friday the 4th and Saturday the 5th of September. The Champs had been postponed twice already this year, obviously due to COVID. So it was good that they actually happened, albeit later in the year than planned. And although we always talk about running on this podcast, I think the first thing that we're going to really highlight and celebrate is the fact that a Worcester AC athlete, Joel Clark-Kahn, became the British champ in the men's high jump. He's coached by Deirdre Elmhurst, and he won the championships. He jumped 2:18, and he cleared 2:18 on his first attempt, even though he rattled the bar slightly. And I don't know if you guys have seen the video. He was almost surprised himself that he made it over. But just 20 years of age, he had a serious knee injury and was operated on in 2018. So just an amazing achievement for Joel to sort of come back from that injury and to now be the British champ in the high jump. It's a real special moment for Worcester AC and for Joel and for his coach, Deirdre.
Absolutely. Well done, Joel. Really, really proud to be associated with your club. Absolutely brilliant.
Back to the running then. Some really nice races, loads to talk about. And I thought it was really enjoyable to watch. Before the champ started, there was a lot of talk was about some of the athletes who perhaps weren't there. And also there was a lot of chatter about the TV coverage or lack of TV coverage. But I think overall with the red button in terms of the TV coverage, most people who wanted to see the races probably could see most of it, if not all of it. In terms of the athletes who weren't there, mainly due to races in Marseille and Brussels, we didn't see some of the top names in some of the events. And there was lots of chatter about the reasons for not being there. Obviously, athletes needing to make a living out of the sport, and perhaps the other meets had good prize money or good appearance fees, where the British champs may not have done. So that aside, I think once we got into the action, it was really quite enjoyable to watch. If I start off with the women's 5,000 metres, and as I said, our guest this week in the interview, Jenny Nesbitt, ran in that race, and Jenny came ninth with the season's best of 16:10. But the top three in that race were Jess Judd, Blackburn Harriers in 15:37, Verity Ockenden from Swansea in 15:41, and Amelia Quirk from Bracknell in 15:43, and all names that we've mentioned a few times already on this podcast. A really good race to watch. Started at about 9 p.m. Bronwyn Owen sort of took out the race in the initial stages, led through 3K in 9:40 after a relatively slow first K in 3:24. But after that, it was sort of Jess Judge showed her class, pulled away in the latter stages, ran a final 1 kilometre of 2:47. So a really good race to watch. The commentators were saying it was relatively blustery, quite windy on the night, but the athletes didn't seem too badly affected by that. And interestingly, Jess Judd went on to win her 1500 metre qualifier in 4:15 after the 5000. About 35 minutes later, she jumped into the 1500 metre. In that same race, Hannah Taunton from Taunton AC ran 17:17 to break the T20 5,000 metre women's record as well, which was good to see. What did you think of the race, Robbie?
It was, yeah, I mean, like you say, I mean, Jessica Judd, again, just kind of showed her class really, and it was difficult to kind of look past her as the race kind of progressed. You could just see her just looking so strong. I mean, she sat in for quite a long time behind kind of Bronwyn Owen. It was difficult not to kind of want Bronwyn Owen to somehow kind of pull it off, because she kind of ramped up the pace when it needed to be and kind of, you know, took it to the rest of the field. But like I say, you just kind of knew that Jessica Judd was just kind of sat in there, and ultimately she was going to be able to kind of ease away. I really like Amelia Quirk, to be honest. She's my favourite out of the field at the moment, and she's a name that we've kind of mentioned kind of time and time again. She just seems like an absolute kind of battler, really, and she just stuck with it. So yeah, good race. And like you say, it did actually look quite blustery. They looked like they were working hard, especially on the home straight, kind of when they were coming in.
How about you, Kat? Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah, going into watching it, I thought Amelia Quirk, she was kind of my one that I thought she might do something special, having outkicked Verity Ockenden in the Bromley 3K. 3,000. I thought she might actually do something. It was really great race to watch from that point where the four broke away. All names we've seen run recently, knowing they're all in good form. And although it did feel the whole time like Jess Judd would probably pull away from them, it was, I thought Amelia Quirk might catch Verity Ockenden back up again in that last part. Shame to see Bronwyn Owen kind of fade a bit at the end. But.
And as I said, we'll get Jenny's sort of inside take of it at the end of this episode as well.
Yeah, it was interesting to see when the four broke away, you almost, as they broke away, you thought you've either got to go with them now or they're away. It was whoever got into that little group. And I think Jenny was just not quite in that spot when they broke away.
Well, sticking with the 5,000 metres, if you go to the men's event, no real surprise with the winner, with Mark Scott, obviously a Cambridge and Coleridge runner and Bowerman. He won the race in 13:32 in a race where nine men went under 14 minutes. In second place with Jack Rowe from Aldershot in 13:37 and Tom Mortimer from Stroud, who's also a Loughborough student or was recently a Loughborough student, came third in 13:43. So, yeah, another strong win for Mark Scott, and really much like Jess Judd did in the women's event, Mark sort of showed his class in the latter stages. Initially, the race was taken out by Jake Smith for the first kilometre, and Jake Smith eventually finished in fourth place. And we've spoken about Jake Smith in the earlier episode of this podcast because he ran a 28-minute flat 10K during lockdown. But after the first kilometre, Scott took it on, dropped a few fast laps to get a gap, which he then held on to. And he went through the 3K in 8:05. And as I say, finished in 13:32. Jack Rowe finished strong. They were sort of working in a pack. So Jack Rowe, Tom Mortimer and Jake Smith worked together behind Mark Scott. And it was another good race to watch. As I say, 9 men under 14 minutes. And Tom Evans, in his first track race for 3 years, although he didn't get under 14 minutes, ran 14:14. And we've mentioned Tom Evans a few times on this podcast, again, just highlighting his range and versatility. What did you think of the men's race, Robbie?
Well, it became a bit of a kind of cakewalk for Mark Scott, really, didn't it? It was, you know, in the end, again, it was just one of those where he just knew that he was just kind of biding his time. I'm not sure whether, again, it was kind of, it just looked pretty difficult conditions, to be honest, and maybe that had an impact on some of the people out there, but it was, I know he's kind of finished further down the field, so probably we should be talking about higher up runners, but Tom Evans is an interesting athlete at the moment, isn't he? So I don't know whether you know, Ben, what his kind of plans are. He's turned from such long distances to these short track races. I don't know whether he's going to stick with it or what his kind of plans are, really.
I don't know. It seems from the outside looking in that he sort of prides himself on this versatility and the fact that he can have such range and he can do both. What did you think, Kat? Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, and I think Jake Smith he'll be really pleased with setting out that pace at the start, because he came away with a 13-second PB, which had he let the pace stay the same at the start there, he probably would have not come away with the race with anything, but he came away with that PB for taking on the pace early on. So I think he'll be really pleased even with the fourth place finish.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to see someone take on the pace.
Yeah.
No race doesn't suit them necessarily, just to think, I'm going to go to the front, I'm going to do a bit of the work and hopefully get rewarded.
And
with.
They're going to get something out of it instead of just running somebody else's race. They stand a chance of actually taking something away from it, exactly. Whatever happens.
Okay, let's move to the steeplechase. In the men's race, we had Phil Norman, who I think is the expected winner for that race. He ran 8:32. He came in front of Mark Pearce from Shaftesbury in 8:33 and Daniel Jarvis, who's a Bedford runner, in 8:39. The race was taken out by Mark Pearce, who sort of ran from the front for the vast majority of the race, and it appeared that Phil Norman was just sitting on Mark until he wanted to make his move, and that Phil Norman was there, I think, to do a job and to win the race, which he did do. Phil Norman had run a PB of 8:23 earlier in the year. The women's 3,000 metre steeplechase, I think, was a really interesting one, and I know one that we all enjoyed, mainly because of Amy Pratt's approach to the race, and again, the fact that she just went out, took the race by the scruff of the neck, and was rewarded with a PB, and obviously becoming the British champ. She won it in 9:30, followed by Rosie Clark from Epsom and Newell in 9:46, and Hannah Nuttall in third place in 10:25. What did you think of Amy Pratt, Robbie?
Well, she was, she was great to watch, wasn't she? Another absolute battler. I know that we kind of, when we were messaging each other, Kat, you kind of called this as one of your favourites of the weekend.
Yeah, I just love her attitude to each race, even the 800 metre heats. It's like, I'm making sure I'm just going out and going out hard. And the 3000 steeplechase is just great watching her just, you know, it's what you want to see as a spectator. You want to see a chance of records and you want to see people actually, you know, go as hard as they can go. And that's what she does. She's great to watch.
She literally couldn't have run any harder, could she? She absolutely kind of left it all on the line. I mean, it was a shame she couldn't just kind of dip and I'm sure she'd have been over the moon, even more over the moon if she'd have run 9:29:59. But I don't think she could have found that extra kind of second, anywhere in the race. So
her 9:30 was a world lead, a championship, and stadium record. She's coached by Vincente Madal, got 4 national titles, 2 at under 20 and 2 at under 23. Interestingly, after the event, she said she'll be targeting the British record before this season is out, which is 9:24. She currently sits 5th on the all-time list. As you said, good front running, ran through the first K in 3:07. And then, much like we mentioned with Jess Judd, she also lined up in the 800 meter final an hour after this race and came fifth in 208.
I know we keep talking about the conditions as well, but I wouldn't put it past her to do the 9:24 if she got if she got better conditions and just kind of hit it right, then it must be worth a few seconds. So again, it looked pretty tough going out there at times.
Another really good race. I know one of my favourite races of the meet was the men's 800. So Daniel Rowden from Woodford won 1:45.94 to take the win, and he beat Jake Whiteman from Edinburgh in 1:46.26. In third place was Yusuf Izamana. He's a Victoria Park and Tower Hamlets athlete, and he ran 1:47.94. So a really impressive run from Daniel Rowden. He had 2019 completely out after an operation. Tactically really good. Again, Rowden sort of stayed on Whiteman's shoulder, and then sort of from the outside looking in, seemed like he just cruised to victory in the last 50 to 100 metres. And he backed up his recent win in Gothenburg, where he ran a 1:44 PB. We perhaps shouldn't have been so surprised that Rowden won, as he was the quickest time in the heats to qualify for the final. But you never know what happens in the heats, really. And obviously, Whiteman was in great form coming from his recent 1500 meter PB, which we spoke about last time, to put him second on the all-time British list, 1500 meter running. Looked really smooth, really impressive. A great run from Daniel Rowden, Robbie.
I think it was, I was definitely guilty of kind of stargazing maybe with just presuming that Jake Whiteman was going to kind of cruise to victory, especially after, like you say, what he did in his 1500 in Monaco. But Daniel, I mean, it was a perfect race. I mean, I read it somewhere that he just didn't put his foot wrong from the start to the finish. Yeah. And like you say, when he came past him in the last 100, he just looked like he kind of had kind of energy to burn and energy to spare, really. He didn't even look as though he was trying. So yeah, shame for local runner Sam Roberts-Nash from Birchfield as well, who kind of led that first 451. Obviously went out hard and ended up kind of fading badly and finished seventh in 1:52. But I think if he's got the confidence and the ability to kind of run that first 451, then obviously, you know, kind of good things are going to be waiting for him. What were your thoughts, Kat?
I'd read going into it that Daniel Rowden was one of the favourites alongside Jake Whiteman. So I was kind of looking forward to seeing what he was like, and watching him in the heats, he just looked, he looked like he wasn't trying. He just looked so strong. So I wasn't surprised in the final, but it was a great one to watch.
Over in the women's 800, again, a name that I think we've mentioned pretty much every week, took the win. Keely Hodgkinson from Lee, she became the British champ running 2:03. And second place, Isabel Boffey from Enfield, 2:04, and Ellie Barker from Shaftesbury in third in 2:04 as well. What do you reckon, Kat?
Yeah, it was good. The thing I like best about the women's 800, it was in the heats. Philippa Millage, she's a vet 40, led one of the 800 heats into the first 700 metres. And that gave me some hope. She turned 40 this year and she's there at the British Champs leading the race. I was completely behind her. But yeah, she didn't make the final, but it was really good to see at that age competing at that level.
That's all your performance out, and that'll be you next year.
Yeah, that's what I'm aiming for now. You know, before that I was just thinking, you know, just get a sub 25K. Now I'm thinking British Champs. But yeah, carry on with the final.
Yeah, absolutely. If we go to the 1500s, men's 1500 metre race was won by George Mills from Brighton in 3:51.39. Neil Gawley from Griffnock in 3:51.54 came second. And a name we've spoken about a lot as well on this podcast, Josh Lay from Rugby/Loughborough Student, 3:51.60 in third place. So George Mills, who's a Brighton University graduate, added the outdoor championship to the indoor championship that he won in Glasgow earlier this year. A very close race, but a relatively slow race as well. And with the first four athletes coming in within 1 second of each other. And the first 800 very steady with a sort of quick last 400. The first 800 went through in 2:14, led by Josh Lay. And it appeared to be Josh Lay just didn't perhaps get his positioning right coming towards the end, somewhat boxed in. But George Mills sort of managed to get his positioning just right and came through to win. In the women's 1500, no huge surprise that Laura Waitman from Morpeth won in 4:09.76. Jess Judd backed up her 5,000 metre win with a second place finish in this one in 4:12.35. And Katie Snowden from Herne Hill finished the top three in 4:14 dead. Another relatively slow race in this one. And Waitman again sort of showing her class to get victory over Jess Judd. And obviously we can't rule out the fact that Judd had just ran the 5,000 final and the 1,500 heat the night before. So that might have been in her legs as well. Did you guys have much to say about the 1,500?
I mean, Josh Lay is a name that we just keep mentioning from the start of this podcast, isn't he? And he's obviously been kind of laying down his PBs over the last few weeks. I wonder whether he'll be slightly disappointed, really, in kind of how the race went. I think if he'd have kind of just run out of track, didn't he? I think he'd have definitely taken second with another 10 yards on the track. And, you know, I mean, he ran a 3:38 a fortnight ago. Obviously, you kind of race the conditions and race the field. And, you know, it's not always about hitting a PB, but, you know, 3:51 to 3:38 is quite a difference, really. And like you say, he kind of just allowed himself to get a little bit boxed in. So I wonder with a little bit more experience, he'd be looking to kind of win that next time, really. What do you think, Kat?
Yeah, I was definitely rooting for him. Molly asked me during the race who I wanted to win, and you suddenly realise that you are actually rooting for certain people in there. I was like, oh yeah, it's that one.
And,
I've been watching his YouTube stuff, so it's kind of, you know, when you get to see a bit of their story, you really are rooting for them.
That is a sad state of affairs, isn't it? I was rooting for him as well, purely because I've watched his YouTube videos. Yeah. It really couldn't be like that, but it is. I know we mentioned his YouTube videos on the last episode, and you know, I think all credit to him. I think if people are willing to kind of put themselves out and kind of put a bit of media footage of themselves and spend time doing that, I think, you know, nobody else is going to do it for them. So ultimately, if Josh is kind of willing to kind of lay himself on the line for everyone and, you know, give people something to watch, then, you know, I think he kind of deserves every kind of credit, really.
Cool. Okay, guys, if we move away from the British champs, some more racing took place in this weekend just gone, and the run-through events were back in Battersea Park this weekend. There was a 10K and 5K events. In the men's side of things, taking the 10K win, an impressive time of 30 minutes and 48 seconds was Matt Dickinson of Clapham Chasers, which was a huge 40-second personal best for Matt. Second place in 31 minutes 42 seconds was Ewan Cameron from Victoria Park, and he came just ahead of Chris McGurk of Kent in 31:55. So some good times there. In the women's 10K, Julia Bajil, who ran herself to a 35:34 first place, and she was followed by Tara Baig, who clocked 35:58. In third place was April James Welsh in 38:18. In the 5K was where we saw some really impressive times and good depth. For the men, the top three finishers all managed well under the 15-minute barrier, and it was Crawley's AC James Westlake who managed to take the win with a solid 14:29, which again is a 12-second PB for Westlake. In second place was Kevin Moore of Brighton and Hove in 14:39. And in third place in 14 minutes 52 was Joshua Burgess of Lewis AC. So a South Coast takeover there at Battersea Park. And that's mostly from the AB training group, who saw 12 men run sub 16 minutes who were based down in Brighton and Lewis area. In terms of the women's side in 5K, Georgia Bell took the win with a solid 16:34, which was her 5K debut. In second place was Laura Gent in the season's best time of 17:02. And in third place was Laura Bohm in 17:17. Women's field was also strong, with 16 athletes running under 19 minutes. Also this week was a 3,000 metre event meet at Tooting Bec. We saw some speedy times there. Dominic Nolan from Croydon won the men's side of things. He clocked 8:27:48. And in the women's side of things, Leah Harris of Worthing knocked 5 seconds off her personal best, setting a new time of 9:42:78. So we've said it a couple of times now, but it seems to be some really good club racing back in action going ahead this year, which is really good to see. And hopefully we'll keep reporting on all of this in the coming weeks and months. the biggest event other than the British champs, I think, for us guys was the Brussels Diamond League. And I know we all watched that quite closely. Robbie, what did you think of it all?
Yeah, so Brussels Diamond League on Friday night. I mean, this is one of the events that maybe some runners that would have been in the British Championships turned up to for various reasons. Two obvious highlights from the night were the assaults on the kind of lesser known 1 hour record attempt, which caught the imagination of the kind of general running public, really. A, for the fact it's quite a rarity to see this as a record attempt and as a race. And obviously, secondly, because of the Mo Farah factor going for the record. So he broke it. So it did look a bit like he wasn't going to do it at one point, maybe just kind of halfway to three quarters of the way into the hour. But he turned it around brilliantly and he ended up covering 21,330 metres, which is 13.25 miles in the hour, which adds 45 metres to the previous record. Like I said, it did look at one point as if he was struggling. We had a superimposed Gabri Selassie into lane three on the coverage that we were all watching, which was actually really helpful because you could see exactly where Mo was within the record. And at one point, he looked like he was maybe 20 to 30 metres behind. He was definitely 10 metres at the halfway stage, which was obviously the easiest way to kind of measure it. Close to 53 laps in total. It was Mo's first race back on the track since 2017. Obviously, he was scheduled to be back on the track this summer anyway in the Olympics. And he basically ran it with his training partner, Bashir Abdi, who also ran an absolutely superb hour and covered 21,322 metres, which is a new national record for Belgium. Whether it was planned or not, I suspect probably was. Bashir Abdi took the lead for exactly 5 minutes out from the finish. Potentially, he was kind of putting the hammer down and trying to go for the win himself. I thought more likely it was probably a tactical thing to kind of drag Mo into that last kind of 2 or 3 minutes before Mo kind of took over. I thought it was a spectacle. It was way more exciting than I anticipated it would be. And I actually sat there for the whole hour and watched it, which it sounds kind of a tedious thing, but once you have that kind of superimposed Gebre Selassie in lane three, you know, it was almost like a race against this kind of fake runner, which is a weird thing to watch. But
I loved the superimposed Gebre Selassie. That was great. I think without that, it could have been quite dull, not really knowing whether he was on target or not, just, you know, maybe a halfway split and things. But yeah, with that, it gave it a real race feel.
The superimposed Gabri Selassie looked like he was working hard from the start, to be honest. I thought they could have kind of put a bit more of a smoother runner in there. It looked like they just kind of put a superimposed version of myself kind of trying to run for an hour on there with all arms and legs flailing.
Yeah, his little arms and legs were just going.
hammering it away, but he was in lane three, to be fair to him. So.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think the common sort of insult thrown at these sorts of events is that it's not a race, it's not exciting. But I'm with you, I thought it was really good. I love that sort of stuff. Someone just got something in mind, go as hard as you can for an hour and see where you get. We've spoken about how it sort of likens to the more popular or more cycling 1 hour event. So I thought it was really good. I think it's great to see athletes doing that in these sorts of times. And hopefully what it will do, I'm not sure it will now that races are starting again, but hopefully it will mean other athletes will have a crack at it. Because I think that record could still be broken by some other athletes out there today. And I think with the having a knowledge of where the athletes were is great, because we see it in other sports. So if you ever watch swimming, for example, you always see the world record line going up and down the pool, don't you? So there's no reason it can't happen more in running, I don't think. And I think Mo's joined some pretty good company as well, sort of previous owners of the record, Emil Zatopek, Ron Clark, and obviously Gabri Selassie as well.
Yeah. Mo's attempt came after the women's attempt as well, which was basically a showdown between Bridget Koskay and Sifan Hassan, which was actually a bit more of a race, really, than the kind of men's attempt, purely because they are, you know, they're not training partners, Koskay and Hassan, so they were genuinely kind of racing it out. I mean, they went off at such a pace for the first kind of 20 minutes that the world record was never in danger, really, that it wasn't going to be broken. And it ended up being Sifan Hassan who took the record. Hassan, who's she's a 10,000 metre and 1,500 metre world champion and mentored for 3 years by Alberto Salazar. She had too much of a kick for Bridget Koskaj at the end of the race. The news came through during Mo's race that Koskaj was actually disqualified for stepping off the track at some point towards the latter stages, and it was purely just due to kind of fatigue rather than trying to get an advantage. Obviously, you know, I mean, there's no one that would step off the track in an hour. It's not like a 400 metre race or an 800 metre race. It's, yeah.
It was her first ever track race as well. I know during my first ever track 400 race, I remember getting told by the person, the official, that I'd stepped on the line and that they'd let it go this time because it made no difference. But for her, it's her first track race. You, as road runners, you just don't have that same respect for the lanes, like, or stepping out, because it just doesn't matter on a road race.
I tell you, she didn't look particularly happy at the end. I don't know if you guys noticed. Hassan was able to sort of shake her hand, and Koskaj didn't look too pleased about it, because Hassan had just sort of sat and sat and sat for the hour, and then the last minute took off. Interesting again to watch. And I think Koskaj's distance would have also beaten the previous record as well if she hadn't been qualified.
To be fair, Kat, your faux pas of stepping on the line was probably not quite as bad as mine in my first track race, when I finished the race and then wandered back through the start line twice. Have you ever seen the race officials at a track race when somebody wanders back through the start line? Bloody hell, it was a bit dicey out there, to be honest. So probably the only other thing worth mentioning from the night was the men's 1500 metres. So Charlie Duvall Grice finished fifth in 3:38.22, which by my calculations is probably the quickest UK men's 1500 run of the weekend. And it was a run that actually Jacob Ingebrigtsen got to take the win, and with Chariot not running. So he ran 3:30.69. Okay, so yeah, moving on, the world record in the women's only half marathon in Prague. So a completely women's field, which interestingly was an Adidas event, with all athletes wearing the new Adidas Adizero Adios Pro.
So yeah, it was a lapped course in Prague set up by Adidas, essentially. So all the athletes were Adidas athletes. 16.5 laps for the half marathon, so 1,280 metre per lap. They set off fairly early in the morning, I think 8 a.m. local time. It was somewhat on the warm side, but it didn't seem to slow Perez Cheptegei down. She ran 65:34, as you say, for the women's only world record. The previous record for that event was 66:11, set in the 2018 World Half Marathon Championships.
So in Marseille, so this is the World Athletic Bronze level meeting. So this basically forms the second tier of international one-day meetings after the Diamond League. This is actually the inaugural season. There were a couple of runners at this event that were kind of noticeable absentees from the British Championships who probably people would have liked to have seen. So Laurie Muir in the 800 metres took the win in 2 minutes flat, 0.16, with a trademark last 200 metres to separate herself from the pack. She did what Laurie Muir does and just put the turbo on, and when she got to the 200 metre line, and it was never in doubt. So I think she put about kind of 30 metres into the field in the last 200 metres. Guildford Zadel Tracy came in fourth in 2:01.86. Both her time and Laura's kind of both just fell short of season best times. And then in the 1500 metre women, Laurie Muir's housemate and training partner Gemma Reekie came away with the win in 4:02.20. And Eilish McColgan, she came in fourth in 4:05.59, both about 2 seconds off their season best times, but probably with a bit of money in their pockets. And then we move on to, just to kind of give a shout out to the Mid-Cheshire 5K. It's a little bit out of date, really. So this was on the Friday, the 28th of August, so we're about kind of 10 days out. But it was just another really quick UK organised 5K on the road, which was, you know, another well organized kind of safe environment that was streamed live, which we're all kind of really enjoying. Adam Craig from Team New Balance Manchester took the win in 13:52, and he beat Omar Ahmed for Birchfield into second place at 14:08, and then Nigel Martin from Sale Harriers came in at 14:09. I don't know if you both watched this, but Omar, as we kind of used to seeing him do it at the podium 5K and the Milton Keynes 5K, kind of went out like a bat at it, how like he does. And there was a moment when he kind of looked over his shoulder and saw Adam Craig kind of gliding next to him, that you almost kind of saw in Omar's eyes that he realised that he had a race on his hands. Mohammed, who's a former Intercounters champion a couple of years ago, so he tried to kind of stay with the pace but faded in the second half really, so he kind of finished a bit further down the field. And then in the women's, Gerda Stein came over and raced. Gerda, for people that don't know, is a South African. And she's actually the current Comrades champion. So she's used to races of a longer distance nature. So she would be happy to take the win in 15:44. And she pipped two local runners. So Samantha Harrison from Charnwood in 15:48. Interestingly, Samantha was actually running her first 5K race, and she's less than 2 years into her competitive racing career. And I know she actually turned down to the British Championships as well. And then Sophie Woods from Sale Harriers technically got the third quickest time of the night in 16:30, although that was actually the win in the B race.
There have been some other races that have been happening over the last couple of weeks. We've seen a couple of BMC races at Nuneaton. There was a Trafford track meet, which was hit by some really bad weather, but we saw some good athletes show up. And speaking of Jess Judd, we actually saw some pictures of her pace the under 13 800 meter race, which was nice. There's a couple of 3000 meter meets at Wimbledon Hercules and a Lee Valley BMC meet on the 29th of August as well. So as we keep saying, racing seems back in action, which is good. A couple of pieces of news that sort of caught our attention from the worldwide running scene this week. First of all, the County Antrim half marathon lineup was announced, so Northern Ireland, and that's going to be taking place on the 12th of September, a fast and flat course. And we've had a couple of big names say they're going to line up there. So we had Mo Farah announce that he will be racing that race alongside Mark Scott, which will be a debut for his half marathon career. And then the women's side of things, Joe Pavey and Lily Partridge were also announced. So we're expecting some fairly good times there. At the County Antrim Half Marathon on the 12th of September. Other names, Stephen Scullion, Northern Irishman, will be racing, and it should be live streamed as well. And the other big news, I thought we saw that Joshua Cheptegei, who we spoke about last time because he broke Bekele's 5,000 metre world record on the track, has announced that he will be going for Bekele's 10,000 metre world record in Valencia on October the 7th. So that's going to be taking place just 10 days before Cheptegei is scheduled to make his half marathon debut at the World Half Marathon Championships in Poland. Cheptegei is coming for Bekele's 10,000 world record of 26:17:53, which Bekele ran in 2005 in Brussels. There's also some suggestion that not only does he have that world record in mind of 26:17, he's also got half an eye on going sub 26 minutes for the distance on the track, which would be pretty spectacular. So I'm sure we'll all be watching that closely.
I tell you what, if he takes off 18 seconds off the world record, that'll be quite something, really, won't it? I would say personally that if he's nominating that race to go for the world record in the same way that he did with the 5,000 meters, I would say he's probably going to get it. He's probably pretty sure he's capable of running the splits.
Yeah, I think, as you say, when someone comes out and says it, one, it's really good to hear, just to see someone put it out there, and you know, knowing that they could fail. But yeah, you would expect them to be fairly confident if they're going to come out and say, this is what we're doing. A bit closer to home news, Robbie, we've spoken about it a lot now, but there's another England Athletics announcement that suggested some sort of restricted return of cross-country competition in the UK.
So, I mean, this is an announcement that obviously affects us three as kind of cross-country runners and probably the people that listen to us who also will be kind of looking forward to the cross-country league. It's probably worth just kind of banging through it and reading it out. Okay, following a meeting held with, among others, the English Cross-Country Association, the areas and some league organisers earlier this week, the sports governing body in England announced on Friday that a proposed timeline has been agreed for the staging of cross-country events. So pilot competitions are to be staged from the middle of next month until mid-October, with the licence application process for events provisionally opening on October the 5th, and licensed cross-country competitions provisionally able to resume from October the 17th. The statement basically warned that cross-country competition will be unable to resume in the traditional format, so adaptations will have to be made based on the current circumstances regarding the virus. However, England Athletics believes that this is an exciting step forward for the cross-country community, and we are currently working on guidance with the named organisations to support competition providers in providing a safe return to adapted cross-country competition. So ultimately what this kind of means is that fixture one has been cancelled, which is no surprise. So there'll be no fixture one for the league meetings in October. But what it does look like is definitely going to happen in October is going to be the area cross-country relays, which means that we're all going to get a chance to race. So that will be on October the 17th. So the Midland relays potentially in other areas. And then we kind of run through into November where the kind of provisional go-ahead for a League Two fixture has been put on. And then on November the 28th, the UK Cross Challenge will be back, hopefully, in the European Trials, which we believe is going to be in Milton Keynes. And although this timeline is subject for kind of change for obvious reasons, from January onwards, it does look a lot more familiar. So we've got our kind of, you know, fixture four, fixture five, if there is a fixture five. We've got the World Trials, and we've got a National Cross Country on March 6th, and we've got the Inter-Counties on February the 20th as well. Obviously, there, you know, like they're saying in the statement, there are going to be changes to kind of the traditional kind of format of cross country, which ultimately will take what we can get. It will be a shame not to have those kind of classic cross country starts where you get kind of big fields of runners in the cross country setting. But I know that one idea that they've mooted has been setting runners off in waves based on their estimated kind of finishing time for the club. So that would obviously lie with the coach, who would kind of nominate, I don't know, one and two, who would go off in the first wave, three and four, and so on. So yeah, I mean, for me, massively optimistic. I mean, I'm even reading that and actually arranging other races that I'm planning to do around it and trying to leave November free, you know, on the prospect of kind of doing these relays. What are your thoughts, Ben?
You say nice to hear some optimism, intrigued by what it means when they say unable to resume in a traditional format, and obviously that's for obvious reasons. And I think setting off in waves has been shown to be workable on road races so far since lockdown's been eased. Does that mean there's going to be some sort of timing chip involved, or would it just solely be race your wave and see where you come there? And also actually a point that George Beardmore raised, that I was talking to him about it, is unlike road races, sort of further back on the waves, how sort of chopped up is the field going to get prior to you running on it, and how big of a difference is that going to make for different runners and different waves if there's been a whole host of people ahead of you? But no, good to hear that hopefully it's going to come back sometime soon.
What are your thoughts, Kat? Are you excited about cross-country season?
Yeah, really excited to hear the relays will be back. I love them. I've done them a couple of times and really enjoyed the cross-country relays. So that would be good. I think that one's more workable, the relays, because everything is a little more staggered anyway. I'm still not quite sure about how you can run cross-country without the mass start, because it's all about your position in the field. And if you don't know where your position is in the field, you can't race people that aren't in your wave. You know, that's how we run cross country, isn't it? You're racing the field. It will be interesting to see what they come up with.
Well, okay, guys, another thing that's not exactly back to normal. The last piece of news is the London Marathon that we've covered quite extensively. The latest announcement from the London Marathon was just the schedule, so the timings of the event. And what we've heard is that the elite women's race is going to go first, as it often does or normally does. They're going to kick off at 7:15 in the morning. That's going to be followed 3 hours later with the elite men's race at 10:15, followed by the wheelchair races at 10 past 1pm. So I think what I took from this, really nice that we're just going to be able to watch all of the race for all the different events. Because often, as you know, traditionally the London Marathon, the women set off first and then the men set off before the women have finished, so you're sort of flicking between the two. But hopefully this means that we'll see all of the women's race in full, and we'll see all the men's races in full, and all of the wheelchair races in full, which hopefully will be make it a good spectacle watching on the TV.
I think you've missed off the big news of the London Marathon this weekend, which is Inside Running podcast Julian Spencer's pulled out.
which I didn't want to bring it up. I thought you might get upset, Robbie.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to get my head around the news, to be honest. So, you know, the whole event's dead to me from now on.
Good to hear.
I want no part in any further discussion about the London Marathon.
Well, we know you're going to be listening to the Inside Running podcast on Wednesday when it's out, Robbie. But otherwise, you got anything exciting coming up outside of running?
Not so much, really. I'm back at work this week in the office. So we're doing 1 week in, 1 week out. So I was out of the office last week and in this week. My next week is going to be trying to avoid COVID-19 in my office environment.
Best of luck with that.
Thank you.
Kat, you've got some more exciting news than that, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got a trip planned on the 18th of September, going up to Yorkshire to run around the Yorkshire Three Peaks route with John. So that'll be a really tough day for me, easy day for him. It's 25, I think about 25 and a half miles the route, and about 5,000 foot of elevation.
But there's an absolutely superb video on the Three Peaks from the 1970s on YouTube. If you look at it, it will. Maybe it's not a good idea to watch it, to be honest. it's one of my favourite running videos.
We're aiming to do about 5 hours. I think I've walked it before, and we did it in 10 hours. I think me and Adam Pollock were running the last part of it. Just once you start walking downhill, you start building up a bit of momentum and it's easier to run. They've ended up just running, I think.
Surprised Pollock wasn't on a bike, to be honest.
Yeah, these days.
Well, sounds good, Kat. Best of luck for that. You'll have to let us know how it goes next time. Okay, guys, so all that's left for me to do really is just introduce the interview. As I said, we've got Jenny Nesbitt. Started off her career at Worcester AC as part of Dave Walker's successful group. She won the Worcester City 10K in 2017, and from then just gone from strength to strength. Raced in the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast in Australia, and perhaps most notably won the Intercounties Cross Country Championships in 2019 in Loughborough. She represents Wales and had a really good chat, particularly about her British 5,000 metre race. So we hope you all enjoy it. Guys, thanks again for joining in, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, guys.
This week on Track, we are delighted to be joined by Jenny Nesbitt. Jenny is a Hoka Ono Ohne sponsored athlete currently located in Cardiff. Jenny has impressive PBs from 3,000 metres to the half marathon and is a regular in track, road and cross country races throughout the year. Jenny began her athletics career with Worcester AC as part of Dave Walker's successful group and won the Worcester City 10K in 2017. More recently, Jenny competed in the Commonwealth Games in 2018 on the Gold Coast in Australia in the 10,000 metres. And in 2019 had brilliant performances in both the Welsh National Cross Country Champs and the Intercounties Cross Country Champs, in which she won both races. Jenny went on to race in the European and World Cross Country Championships that year and continues to race across the club scene and is set to continue her brilliant career in the sport. Jenny has managed to jump back into a few races since lockdown restrictions have been eased, and most notably competed at the British Champs this weekend in Manchester in the 5,000 metres event, clocking a time of 16:10 in ninth place. So delighted that she has agreed to talk to us and all things running here at Track. Hi, Jenny, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How about yourself?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Thanks very much for taking some time out to have a chat with us, particularly so soon after the British Champs in Manchester.
Yeah, it's not a problem. It's great to have been asked.
How did the Champs go for you?
Personally, not that well. I feel like I definitely underperformed. But I think I've really struggled coming back from kind of lockdown and this year, and it's nothing really in regards to my racing's clicked. So it wasn't unexpected, if I'm honest, but still a great opportunity to go and race against the girls I hadn't seen for a long time and just get back onto that kind of like championship sort of racing style, really.
So what were your ambitions going into the race? Did you have a time in mind or a position in mind?
I think just to be as competitive as I could have been in the race. And I think there were kind of a few breaks that I should have been able to go with and just wasn't really able to for some reason or another. So I kind of, came away a little bit disappointed, really. But I think, with like regards to the year, still a great, chance to kind of compete in British Athletics did well to kind of put the champs on in the end. So there were positives too.
Yeah, absolutely. How did the champs compare to sort of previous versions, obviously with the social distancing aspect of it? Was it a very different day?
A lot quieter. To be honest, it felt almost like Sports City. It was a bit of a ghost town when I walked the track, actually. And because our race was quite late, actually, on the Friday night, a lot of athletes who had competed earlier in the day had gone home. So it was almost, yeah, it was kind of turning up to just a local league race, really. But still, like, it kind of brought you back to your roots a little bit, which I kind of liked.
So you said it was sort of 9 p.m. kickoff, which is quite late. What does your sort of race day prep look like, particularly on such a late start? Are you sort of preparing from the minute you wake up? Are you a nervous racer? How did the day unfold?
So I tend to sleep in as long as possible to kind of just reduce the amount of hours I've got between waking up and going to the race. Mm-hmm. So I kind of maybe wake up and I let myself naturally wake up and then kind of lie in bed for a little bit, have a coffee, and then I go out for a 20-minute sort of shake out just before lunch, and then I kind of come back, shower, and sit around all day. I'm not the sort of person who tends to kind of overthink about the race before it happens. I kind of don't want to kind of think about it until I get to the stadium, really. Just watch trashy TV and drink a bit more coffee, eat a little bit of food, and yeah, head to the stadium. Got there about 2 hours before we started racing. So
prior to the champs, Jenny, there was lots of talk in the days leading up to the events about some of the athletes that were missing, or that either decided to go and race in Brussels in the Diamond League or Marseille predominantly. What's your take on the importance of the champs, but also your take on as athletes trying to balance that idea of making a living from the sport?
I can definitely see both sides to it. Like, firstly, the British champs, we knew about it, but it wasn't kind of set in stone. And I think athletes kind of wanted to plan as much as possible what they were going to be doing. And obviously kind of earning potential this year has been kind of scrapped and we haven't had the opportunity to earn through racing and stuff. So I can definitely see the kind of draw to going abroad and getting potentially prize money or appearance fees and a guaranteed race in, like, knowledge of a guaranteed race months in advance. So I can definitely see the draw to that, but at the same time, it's nice to go to British champs and finish in a position knowing that you were competing against all the girls in Britain, and that's really where you finish. Like, they say you can only race who's there on the day, but you kind of have at the back of your mind, like, you know, the top four in the UK weren't there, so it's kind of, yeah, a toss up between the two, but I can definitely see both sides to it.
There's also quite a bit of chatter about TV coverage prior to the champs. I don't know if you saw any of that, but I actually saw today that on Friday evening the BBC audience peaked at 1.4 million. There was plenty of interest and plenty of people did access the stream or the live broadcast.
Definitely, and I think I read something earlier actually on Twitter, and it was they say that, you know, no one wants to watch athletics and people don't find it interesting, but actually I think the bigger problem is that it's not put on TV enough for people to watch it. And I think those kind of viewing figures show that, you know, if it's there to watch, people will sit down and enjoy it. So I think that's really important to kind of acknowledge and take forward, especially with it being such a sport where, you know, it's to inspire people need to see athletes kind of competing and racing. And I think that is really important. And another thing to note really was that the women's 5,000 metres, actually the BBC Two broadcast finished at 9 o'clock and the women's 5K was at 9:05. And I think that was a really poor decision on the, I don't know who planned the kind of schedule, but I think not putting on a women's 5,000 metre final on just the BBC Two kind of broadcast was a real shame. And I think, again, women's sport is, you know, behind male sport in a way, and I think, you know, having the likes of Jess Judd out there competing is really inspirational for young children, and I think going forward that kind of needs to be considered too.
Well, that was sort of on my list a bit further down, but now that you've mentioned it, you could argue that sort of athletics in the sort of male, female, quite good in that terms for female athletes. But what's your take on what could be done better for female athletes in the sport of athletics?
Yeah, I think in some regards, it is a very equal sport. Usually prize money is the same, like entry to championship racing is the same. But I think women probably have a lot more barriers to contend with to get to the same level as male athletes. And I think sometimes that's not really considered or talked about. And I think that can definitely sort of hinder and prevent young adults or teenagers kind of progressing with the sport. And you see a big dropout when girls go to university. And I think kind of acknowledging and talking about things like periods and, you know, eating disorders and things like that is really important to kind of keep girls in the sport and, you know, normalize what is normal and allow, you know, girls to talk about that freely and kind of, you know, realize that's what they need in order to progress.
Well, let's jump into that now, if you don't mind. But now that we're talking about it, we recently saw a video from a group at Cardiff Met Uni where you're studying for sports broadcasting, MSc. And you spoke pretty candidly about some of the previous struggles you've had and regarding things like how much you were eating as a younger athlete. And you've also spoken quite openly about being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease back in your younger years. So how important do you think it is for people like yourself who are role models and particularly female role models to speak sort of openly for those younger people to hear people like you voice those things?
I think it is really important. And I think even though I talk about it openly, it doesn't necessarily mean that like every day is fine. Like just because I've gotten over those problems doesn't mean there's still days where things don't go all right. And I think it's important for people to kind of recognize that and kind of understand that it isn't all kind of rainbow and sunshine, and everyone goes through difficult stages, whether that be through running or just like in your general health, anything like that. And it's kind of I think it's positive for people to see that, you know, I went through all that turbulence as a teenager, but I actually still managed to achieve what I wanted to. And, you know, that goes without saying that, you know, I had a lot of help and support from a lot of people. But I think it also shows that if you have like a goal or something, it's important not to kind of give up on it when you come across something that kind of gets in the way.
And how much of did you have to sort of consider and debate within yourself before coming out and talking about things like that? Was it a no-brainer for you, or were you sort of umming and ahhing about talking about those things?
I think quite a long time. When I finished school and went to university, it's still something I was kind of keeping to myself. I didn't really want people to kind of be aware of it. And I think as I've gotten older and I've kind of read other people's stories and realised that actually it is a really big issue within sport, it's kind of made me more open about talking about how I've struggled in the past. And I think to other people then seeing that I've, you know, represented Great Britain, I've been to the Commonwealth Games and things like that. Like, just because you do have kind of things that set you back, it doesn't mean you can't kind of progress beyond in the end.
I remember seeing that video a few months ago and just being really impressed that you did come out and just talk about those things quite open and honestly, because of that very reason that we know there's people who look up to athletes like yourself, and for them to see that is really a positive thing, I think. So
thank you very much.
Just jump back into the British champs for the last time. You mentioned Jess Judd and she won in 1537, Dorothy Ockenden in 1541, and Amelia Quirk in 1543. Now, obviously on your best day, your PBs are quicker than that. And obviously every race is different, but do you feel like on your day you're going to be up there with those guys and running those times?
Yeah, I really hope so. I mean, kind of going into the race, I thought it was an open race. There was an opportunity to get a medal. And I think that's kind of why I walked away so disappointed. Like you say, I've run times that can rival those girls, and to not be kind of up there with them, it's frustrating. So I hope, yeah, going forward, I can kind of dip under the 15:30 mark and see where I can take it, really. I mean, next year, the qualifying window opens for the Commonwealth Games. So I should imagine the standard will be around 15:30 for that. And I kind of really want to qualify for Birmingham. So it'll be on my radar.
Yeah, home games would be pretty special, wouldn't it? Speaking of the Commonwealths, would it be a 5,000 and 10,000 metres you'd be looking at, or concentrate on one or the other?
I'd like to give myself the opportunity in both events. So next year, definitely try and run the standards for both the 5 and the 10K, and hopefully compete over both distances there. But we'll see what happens.
Very last thing on the champs. We were all sort of celebrating because, I don't know if you saw, but Worcester AC athlete Joe Clark-Kahn won the men's high jump, which was pretty special for us and a bit of a surprise, in all honesty. Did you manage to see Joel, or what was your reaction to a Worcester athlete winning that?
I didn't see him personally there, but I did see the result. And I mean, he's been through a bit of an awful time as well with injury. And I remember his competition where he did injure his knee. So I think it kind of, again, reiterates that kind of, you know, a positive mental attitude can really play benefits and give you the reward in the end. And I think he's fully deserving of that win and achieving what he did. So yeah, I was really, really pleased for him.
Okay, great. Well, as we said, Jenny, you've managed to jump back into a few races since lockdown, including the podium 5K, a couple of races in Northern Ireland at the 5K distance. You mentioned that lockdown was potentially a bit of a struggle. And did your motivation change much during lockdown without the knowledge of you had races coming up? Are you someone that needs that sort of race in the calendar to stay motivated?
So Taylor, two stories, really. I think when lockdown initially started, I was very adamant that I was not an athlete that needed any sort of racing for motivation. I was completely like just running because I absolutely love running, and I do. But as it kind of the weeks went on and on, like the lack of goal or something in the future like really started to kind of take its toll. And I think the motivation definitely kind of dwindled a little bit, and I was finding every day being a little bit repetitive without like that focus of what have I got coming up. And sessions kind of just felt like they were just there because it was a Tuesday and a Friday rather than having a purpose. So I think I did really kind of struggle towards the end.
Yeah. And how much did your actual training change? You heard that some athletes sort of took away the high end stuff and just focused on doing mileage, or did your training change at all?
So the first 3 weeks of lockdown, I actually had an Achilles injury, so I didn't run. And I just kind of trained on the bike. So I kind of started afresh after that. And we kind of just kind of looked at mileage and things like that for the first kind of few weeks, before putting, sessions back in place. But actually our training didn't really change that much. And I think because we are distance runners, you can kind of continue as normal as much as possible if you compare to like sprinters or technical events. You can just go out in the park and do sessions and stuff like that.
Well, Jenny, as an introduction for our listeners, I know we've been chatting for a bit already, but we like to sort of talk through our guests' PBs. So if it's right by you, I'm just going to run through some of your PBs and do sort of jump in if any of them aren't quite right. Okay, your 1500 meter PB back in 2014.
Oh God.
That's a 4:30.08.
Correct.
Also in 2014 at Cheltenham, you ran a mile PB of 4:58.34.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you would have done quicker in training.
I'd like to hope so.
3,000 metres, Belfast International, you ran 9:05. Mm-hmm. 5,000, as you said, 15:30.95. And that was at Tipton last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your 10,000 metre PB was at the Highgate Night of PBs in May 2018,
32:38. Yeah.
And you ran a half marathon in Reading in 2016 of 72:54.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Out of those PBs, what are those sort of stick out as the one you're sort of most pleased with, most proud of? And on the other side, what one of those do you think you want to sort of take down in the future?
Well, we'll start with the one I want to take down in the future. And I think the 1500 meter PB of 4:30 should should be able to be taken down a little bit. So that's definitely an event I want to kind of throw myself into when I get the opportunity again, because as a youngster, that's what I competed in and I absolutely loved it. So no, it'd be good to kind of go back and see if I can run a bit better than my under 17 self.
Yeah.
As for a time that kind of stands out, there's probably two. I think the 5K I ran last summer, that really shocked me. Actually, I didn't expect to run as well as I did. And I think I was very lucky. The race was perfect for me. I had a guy that basically just paced me around in like metronomic laps to the actual finish. And everything kind of just clicked that day. So I think that's probably like my favorite PB at the moment. And it's just a shame it wasn't in just an all-female race, because I know those times, although they do count, they don't technically count towards kind of qualifying for anything. Oh. And that half marathon PB in Reading, I've never been able to get close to it since. And I honestly think it's because I was so naive going into the race and didn't know what the hell I was doing. That it is as it is. I definitely want to take that one down again as soon as possible, but at the same time, yeah, I'm still really proud of that.
You mentioned sort of dropping down to the 15. Do you have an eye on going longer, so more halves and potentially a full marathon anytime soon or in the future?
Definitely in the future I want to run a marathon, but I think I'll give it a few more years yet. I think firstly I definitely need to improve over the half before I even consider running a marathon. And I also need to get my head around the training for a marathon, because it honestly looks horrific. And some of the sessions that I see just like blow my mind. So I definitely need to kind of up my game a little bit in that area too before I actually take on a marathon.
For people who don't know, your other half, Josh Lunn, is currently training for the London Marathon. Is that right?
He is. He's going really well. So I'm really excited to see how he kind of performs, and I think he'll run a really good race. He's actually racing a half marathon this weekend in Antrim. So he'll be lining up alongside the likes of Mo Farah and Ben Connor and Mark Scott. And I think it'd be really good to kind of see what he does there and how he comes off the back of that. And yeah, going towards London, I think it'll be a really odd race. Like, I think it's 21 or 22 laps of St. James's Park. But yeah, I think it'll be a fast race, so it should be good.
Just on that lastly, how is it living with a fellow runner? Do you ever struggle to sort of get away from the sport and switch off from running because you're both in it all the time?
Well, I think I'm almost lucky in the fact that Josh obsesses over Call of Duty more than he does running. So unless he's actually outside with his trainers on, it's not really that much talked about. It's more about how many kills he's had or whether he's in the gulag or not. So I think we're quite fortunate in that respect.
Sounds good. You don't play Call of Duty yourself?
I most definitely do not.
Cool. All right, well, we mentioned your PBs. What we've also got here, we've got a few notable performances, because quite often, As you know, you'll have races that you're really proud of, but aren't necessarily PBs. Obviously, the ones that stand out, difficult to call a PB, but your cross-country champs, your inter-counties win at Loughborough in March 2019, and obviously you won the Welsh National Champs in the same year, in February of that year. As you mentioned, you ran in the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast in Australia, which must have been a pretty amazing experience. Other sort of notable performances I've got here are things like when you raced in the European Under 23 Champs and came sixth in Poland in July 2017, and you got the bronze medal in the European Cup 10,000 metres in 2016. So some really good notable performances there. Are any of those sort of ones that really stick out and are really fond memories of yours?
I think cross country, I think as an event, I absolutely love it, and I think that's where I started. I remember racing my first ever race for Worcester AC, actually in Droitwich in the snow at a county champs in January, and absolutely loved it. So I think, yeah, cross country is very close to my heart, and winning the inter-counties in 2019 was amazing. And because it was the qualifier for the world champs as well, the World Cross Country Championships, I kind of got automatically, placed in the team, and the experience of that was incredible. So I think my 2019 cross-country season as a whole was definitely really special. Winning the Welsh Champs, winning the Intercounties, and then going to the World Cross and coming 34th. I think that, yeah, that just kind of will always remain like one of my favourite 3 months ever.
And that sort of finishing picture of you at the Intercounties ended up on the front of Athletics Weekly, did it not? You were,
yeah, that's literally like my life goal, was to end up on the front of Athletics Weekly. Yeah. So I missed out a few times. I think I won in Milton Keynes once, and the male winner was put on the front, and it happened at another event as well. So to finally make it to the front of Athletics Weekly, I mean, I definitely bought about 4 copies of that.
I was going to say, you must have a couple of copies stashed away
somewhere. Yeah.
And you mentioned sort of competing on the world stage there. What's that like as an experience, sort of the build-up, travelling to a different country quite often, sort of mingling with different athletes around the world, I suppose. What's that whole experience like?
I mean, as an athlete who wants to go as far as possible in the sport, I thrive off it. I absolutely love it. And going to like the major champs is what I want to do the most. So I get almost more excited than I do nervous about competitions. And World Champs, for example, going there, it was just so cool because you kind of got there and you stay in the hotel and, like, you know, all the Bowman babes were there, the Inga Britsons were there, and I almost do feel a bit like a fangirl. I absolutely love it. And then you kind of have to kind of pull myself together and think, actually, I'm starting on the same starting line as these girls. I need to be competitive. I need to kind of think about that first and then fangirl after the race. But I think, yeah, kind of putting myself amongst those people like that I really look up to is really great. And I absolutely love it.
I think that's a real sort of benefit to have someone who thrives off those sorts of situations rather than it's too nervous and goes into your shell.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of my best performances have actually come when I've been in a Welsh or a British vest. So I think, yeah, being able to perform under pressure is a really good thing.
Well, Welsh and British vests, that's amazing. If I were to sort of rewind a little bit though, and having a look at your Power of 10 profile before we spoke, your first results on there are back in 2008 as an under 15. Uh-huh. And I think I'm right in saying you represented Worcestershire at things like lacrosse, and you played netball and hockey as a youngster. So athletics and sport has always been a really important part of your life growing up. And if anyone is interested, the first input on your Power of 10 is that you jumped 4:30 at the Midland Schools multi-event champs in Milton Keynes.
Yes.
So yeah, that's good to look back on. But you've mentioned things like school sport and what have you, and always being active and playing loads of different sports. And that must have corresponded with your time at Worcester AC and being coached by Dave Walker.
Definitely.
Who we know very well. What's your sort of memories of working with Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I was really lucky. Firstly, like, school gave me a lot of opportunity, and my athletics coach, Fran Wootton at the time, just took a really big interest in what I was doing and said that I should join Worcester AC. And she took me down there on a Tuesday evening, and her daughter Holly was actually being coached by Dave at the same time, so she introduced me to Dave, and I kind of just loved it from the start. And I always remember my first night at the club, and Dave told me to go for a warm-up with Alice Wright, and it was honestly like a tempo for 2 miles around the outside of the track. And I just remember trying to like hold on to her for as long as possible, thinking this was exactly what I was supposed to be doing. And I think that's where my competitive side kind of came from to start with. And ever since then, I've been massively competitive, but also I have a lot of really, really fond memories from training at Worcester and like my junior years there. And we had a really fun group when I was at school. There was like a real core group of us, and we all got along really well. So it made training fun. I never felt like it was a chore to go to training on a weeknight after school. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely loved it. And I think all credit to Dave, he made it massively enjoyable, but also worked as hard. And he got me from literally running 3 minutes for an 800 meters to running for Great Britain and getting a bronze medal at the European 10,000 meter championships. So I think all credit to him really to kind of get me to a level where I was able to kind of move into the senior ranks and perform well and still continue to get selected for teams.
If we fast forward to today, as we said in the intro, you're now based in Cardiff, and I'm right in thinking coached by Chris Jones predominantly.
Correct.
Having previously been in Bath when you were studying your undergrad degree in sport and social science.
Yeah.
So how did the move to Cardiff come about? And what do you think that's done to your training environment, your running career, and your whole setup?
So my move to Cardiff was quite spontaneous. So I was a very bad undergrad student. I went to university for about 1 month and then I decided that I was going to do it really backwards and do everything online, not attend lectures. And I think mainly because I was still probably struggling quite a lot with my mental health at the time, I didn't really want to kind of be at university, but I also wanted to get a degree. So I kind of went back and lived at home for a while and started going on a few camps with Welsh Athletics. Actually, let me rewind a little bit. First of all, I got a knee injury. So I had to have my knee operated on. And at the time, Chris Jones, who's my coach now, got in contact with me just to kind of ask me how I was doing and stuff, because he'd been my team manager for a cross country, for a European cross country championships. And I kind of messaged him back being like, all like, oh, self-pity. My life is awful. I've got to have a knee operation. And I'd mentioned to him that like my mum was Welsh and my dad was English. And he never said anything about like changing my affiliation with England or whatever. But it was just, it all came to a head. And my mum kind of just said to me, why don't you have a completely fresh start? Go and, you know, change affiliation to Wales. Like my grandparents, so her mum and dad, were like absolute fans of me and competing in the sport and absolutely massive fans of Wales and Welsh sport, and they still live in North Wales now. Mm-hmm. So I was like, fine, yeah, do it. Sent off her birth certificate and all the other relevant paperwork, changed my affiliation to Wales. And as I did that, Chris kind of got more in contact with me and was able to offer more support because the funding comes differently now because I compete for Wales and not England. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the first sort of introduction to Chris really. And then I was able to go on camps with Welsh Athletics and kind of started to dig into his knowledge a little bit more and kind of ask about my training and things I should be doing and things that I was evidently doing really, really wrong. Firstly, running all my runs at about 6 minute pace, whether that be after a session or on a Sunday or whatever. Right. And I was just burning the candle at both ends really. And so yeah, talking to him for a while and kind of started offering more and more coaching advice and looking at it in a different way to Dave Dunn, using scientific knowledge a little bit more and obviously a lot more kind of facilities and testing and stuff that was available. So eventually I kind of parted away with Dave and moved over to Chris. And then about 3 weeks after coming back from the Commonwealth Games in 2018, I was like, I've got nothing to lose. That's it. I'm going to kind of commit, move to Wales, then be able to see Chris on a daily basis, access all the physio and all the facilities that I'm entitled to use and kind of take it from there. So that's what I did. And eventually ended up with a little group of three of us training me, Charlotte Archer and Clara Evans. And it's kind of been, yeah, really good since then.
That was my next question. What's it like training in that sort of group with Charlotte and Clara? How much do you think that helps just being with those sorts of guys day after day and for sessions?
I've definitely seen a massive improvement since I started training with them a couple of years ago. I almost feel like I've taken a step back from that this year, obviously because of kind of COVID and things, access to facilities and like the regular routine we had of training together and stuff's really been limited. And I've really struggled with that. Mm. And I think it's really nice now that we can get back together and train together. And we all get on really well and we're really good friends. And I think kind of that's firstly a really nice thing. And then secondly, we all have different weaknesses and different strengths. So we really complement each other well in training. Mm. And yeah, push each other forward. And yeah, it's really, really good.
Does it ever get competitive in training, or you're quite disciplined? And
we're pretty disciplined, actually. I think we all turn up to training wanting to put in the work and put in the effort, and none of us kind of want to take a back seat there. We want to all kind of get the most out of what we're there to do. So I think we are actually really lucky in the fact there isn't any sort of bitchiness or like over competitiveness. We can all kind of walk away from session, whether it's been a good one or a bad one individually, and kind of be happy for each other and kind of just move on to the next one, really.
You sort of meant you answered it there somewhat already, but what are you like to coach or to be coached?
I think I'm quite a challenging athlete to be coached. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot for me to change my ways. So it's taken Chris since 2018 to finally get me to run slower and use a heart rate monitor. So I think him trying for nearly 3 years kind of shows how much convincing it does take. I'm very much the sort of athlete who needs to be told to do something or to not do something. So if it's written on my plan but I wake up absolutely shattered, I will need the confirmation from Chris to be like, don't do this or do it. Whereas I know other girls will be like, well, I feel really tired today, I'm going to take it easy or cut this run. So yeah, I definitely think I'm a bit of a challenging athlete.
And when those plans are drawn up, is it like you and Chris working together to discuss things, or is it very much, this is what you're doing this month, Jenny, and let me know if there's any problems?
It is more like the latter, but I think especially the last few weeks, I've kind of started to think a few things haven't gone the way I wanted them to, so I've been a little bit more controlling of what I want. I think I sat down with Chris on Friday night for quite a while and just talked through a few things. So I've definitely been more of an athlete who just wants to be told what to do, but I think I've got to take a bit more autonomy and control of my actual training and kind of discuss things a little bit more now going forward. So I think it will change.
You mentioned as an undergrad student it perhaps wasn't the best. What's it like now balancing your MSc part-time, I think, but with your athletics? How's that going?
I'm really lucky in the fact that the guy who leads my course is really, really flexible with what I do. And also my course is based on campus, where the track and all the facilities and where I do all my training is. So I mean, it is literally like a 2-minute walk from, you know, lecture theatre to track. So I haven't really got any excuses. Luckily, like all my kind of contact hours fall around my training as well. So I've never had any clashes, which is really lucky. And whenever I need to travel or go away for training, they're really great. They let me kind of do as I please. But like, I'm the sort of student who will get the work done anyway. I'm not the sort of student who doesn't want to kind of complete what I'm doing, and I pay a lot of money for a degree, so I'm not going to kind of doss around to not achieve it. So I think, yeah, it's on their part great that they allow me to kind of have the flexibility, but I think they also acknowledge that I am 25 and quite mature in the fact that I'm going to get what I need to get done.
And the degree in the MSc in sports broadcasting, is that half an eye on what you might like to do after your running career is up?
Definitely. I think I want to remain within the sport in some way or another for as long as possible. And I think broadcast is a really underrepresented area for women. Mm-hmm. So I think going forward, there will be good opportunity. I think it's being more and more acknowledged now that, you know, more female roles within sports broadcast need to kind of be created. Mm-hmm. And I'm still kind of trying to decide what kind of area of broadcast I enjoy the most. We kind of get to dip our fingers in all of them. But at the moment, I really like just like basic writing. I really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But I'm also quite lucky to know Steve Cram and Alison Kirbishley. I actually bumped into them on Friday after I'd raced, and they both kind of said that, you know, if I wanted to kind of go and try a few things out with them, I could. So I'm going to definitely take that on board this year, and kind of, I think, throwing yourself into that sort of environment And seeing what takes your fancy is a good place to start.
We mentioned also in the introduction that you're sponsored by or supported by Hoka.
Mm-hmm.
How sort of helpful is that to have a brand like Hoka, which I think we're seeing more recently as well, get more and more involved in the UK with really good club athletes and sort of international athletes. So what's it like to have the support of Hoka?
It's great. And I think they support that. Well, they came on board with me in 2017, I think it was. So at the time, it wasn't a really very well-known brand and their shoes were a little bit more clumpy then than they are now. And I think I've been able to see the brand grow through the years as well as kind of my involvement with them. So I think that's been really nice. And you kind of, I have like a, you know, I have a good relationship with the people who kind of run the UK side of the company. So it's been really nice to kind of, yeah, see how they've developed, but also like their continued support's like a massive thing for me. And, you know, it gives you the confidence that if a brand wants to kind of support you, that you're doing something right. Mm-hmm. So I think that is, yeah, a really big thing. And being able to turn up to a race and put on the kit is great. And you feel, it kind of feels quite cool. And there's nothing like getting 12 boxes of trainers delivered at once either. So, I mean, yeah, all that sort of stuff really helps, especially as like a student. You don't have that much money. So yeah, getting the kit and the support from Hoka is really valuable.
Well, I suppose part of the whole being supported by a brand somewhat ties into what athletes do on social media quite often these days. But I suppose what I wanted to ask you is, in general, as an athlete, is the social media side of things something that you think about? Is it something that you think can be useful, but also has some pitfalls?
Definitely both. So within my contract, I am contracted to putting a certain amount of things out on social media. But to be honest, I do really enjoy using social media as well. So I don't really see that as an effort. So there's definitely that side to it. And I think it can be a really good tool for inspiring other athletes and kind of promoting a product or a brand or letting people know what you're doing with regards to racing or things like that. But then on the other hand, it's a snapshot of somebody's life and people can come across just on like a happy level or a positive level for the whole time. And I think people forget that there's actually a human behind the photograph or the tweet or whatever it is. I think it's important that you continue to sort of remember that, whether you're the person putting out the content or the person actually looking at it.
Running focused, we sort of see with Strava these days. And I think one of the main problems with Strava is this idea of constantly being able to compare yourself to what other people are doing. Do you think that's an issue with Strava? Is that something that you find yourself doing, or are you quite good at sort of just focusing on your own training and not worrying about what other people are doing?
I definitely was a victim of that in the past as a kind of teenager. I would definitely kind of use Strava as a way of comparing myself to other athletes. Whereas now I honestly don't even know what other people are doing and I don't really care. I mean, you've got to do training that works for yourself rather than what other people are doing. And I think sometimes people kind of lose sight of that. And I think Strava definitely doesn't encourage people to kind of just look at what they're doing. And I think it can get really competitive. And they say, what, comparison is the thief or joy or whatever. So I think you've got to kind of keep that in mind when you're looking at what other people are doing.
Question I've got here is, so if we're sort of sat down in 15, 20 years from now, Robbie and I are still doing track podcast, and you've finished a long and successful career, what are sort of the main tick boxes that you would like to have done?
I think the most like basic answer is I'd love to go to an Olympic Games. I think that is the pinnacle of sport and something I would really like to achieve one day. So I think that would definitely be like the top of my list. Secondly, I'd want to be able to say I am a healthy and fit individual who hasn't kind of ruined myself through running. Mm-hmm. Because you can only run for a certain number of years, but you've got a long life after that. And I don't want to be, you know, in a wheelchair with osteoporosis or something when I'm 50. So I think that is another thing. I want to be able to continue running for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, I think being able to say I achieved everything I felt I was capable of doing, whether that be running a certain time or finishing in a certain position at a championship. And I think, yeah, being able to look back and not have any regrets or thinking I should have done something else. I think, yeah, that as well. And I think lastly, just kind of walking away with a load of really good memories and friendships. And I think there's nothing like socializing with a group of runners. They're quite all a bit wacky and all a bit kind of, you know, out there. So I think, yeah, those are probably my four things.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. What we're going to do, Jenny, we're going to finish off with some quick fire questions. But just before we do, we've got a guest appearance tonight from Paisley Campbell. And I think Paisley has a question for you, Jenny. So are you ready, Paisley?
You're one of my role models. So what was your role models when you were little?
Oh, thank you so much. I think my role model when I was little, probably Jessica Ennis-Hill. I remember watching her in 2012 at the London Olympics, and I was actually quite ill at the time. So seeing her win gold at a home Olympic Games and just the way she did it and the way she carried herself, I thought was absolutely phenomenal. And it gave me a lot of inspiration and a lot of kind of motivation to kind of crack on and see what I could achieve. And I think that goes back to kind of overcoming hurdles and barriers. And she definitely played a big role in kind of making me believe that was possible.
Okay, Jenny, well, that all that leaves us then is a few quick fire questions, if you don't mind, to finish up. So here we go. If you could go for a run with any athlete, dead or alive, runner or otherwise, who would it be?
Being a Britson Brothers. Okay. I'm a massive fan of them. And I'm absolutely, like, really interested in the sort of training they do and why they do it and the science and kind of knowledge behind it. And I think they're so cool. So they would definitely be the guys I'd want to go for a run with, if I could keep up.
Yeah. You have a favourite, Jakob, Henrik or Felix?
Jakob. And do you know what? At Eurocross last year, I literally went to the loo and he like walked out of it. And I was like trying so hard to like build the courage to be like, can I please get a selfie with you? But I just couldn't bring myself to ask. And I'm gutted about that. Yeah.
He's a superstar, really, isn't he? If he continues the way he's going. Okay, great. If you could only choose one race a year to compete in, so an actual race rather than a distance, which one would you choose?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I think I'd probably say Liverpool cross country. It's something that I've kind of set as a goal for so many seasons. And you kind of never quite know what you're going to experience when you get there, depending on what the ground conditions and the weather are like. There's always a lot riding on Liverpool, and it's brought me some absolutely sad tears, but some really happy tears as well. So yeah, I think Liverpool Cross would probably be that one.
Great. Favourite session and least favourite session?
Least favourite session would have to be something that's really long. So something like 2K, 1K, four times over. Right. I just, like I said earlier, getting my head around marathon training is going to be hard. So if I can't even psych myself up for that session, I'm looking for a bit of trouble. Favorite session, I just enjoy like straight 400s, 24 400s off a minute or 45 seconds. Yeah, I really enjoy those.
Perfect. Okay. Pre-race or pre-session music or track to get you pumped up for the race?
Whatever's on my Discover Weekly for the week. yeah, I'm not very good at organising playlists. I kind of just kind of open up whatever is given to me on Spotify, really, and hope it's it's going to psych me up for the race.
Perfect. Obviously, you mentioned Hoka a few times. What's your favourite shoe to run in?
My Mila shoe, the Clifton 7. It's a great shoe. Literally order about 12 pairs of them a year. Racing flat, the Rocket X. I don't actually think it's available to the public yet, but when it comes out, it's definitely the best carbon plated shoe Hoka have created.
Right, and finally, your latest Netflix recommendation for the listeners. What have you sort of been watching recently?
What have I been binging on? So I watched The Fall, which was, I think that was on Netflix. It might have been on BBC iPlayer. But yeah, I do recommend that. And another one, which, again, I'm cheating, was on BBC iPlayer, was Normal People a couple of months ago. I binged through that. I think I watched it in about 30 hours. So yeah, I really recommend those two.
That sounds good. Judging by your Instagram, I thought you might go for some sort of Michael McIntyre.
I gotta say, I do love a bit of stand-up comedy.
Sounds good. All right, Jenny, thank you very much. That's brilliant. Where will people find you on things like Twitter and Instagram? Are you on all of them?
So Twitter, it's at Jenny Nesbitt, and Instagram is at Jenny Nesbitt 1. I think Facebook's just Jenny Nesbitt.
Perfect.
So really original usernames there.
Yeah, well, listen, Jenny, thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us. We really appreciate it, and obviously, you know, we'll be keeping a close eye on all your races to come and what will be a long career, I'm sure. So thank you very much, and hopefully we can talk again in a few years' time when some of those boxes have been ticked.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on, and yeah, I'll let you know when I'm back home so we can go for a run together.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jenny. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.